And then it occurred to me, what luck.
Okay.
I
so,
swore a solemn
my family
vow.
Is really intense.
I was invited to a party.
Totally
and
different.
I remember there was
I come from a large Irish, Italian, Catholic family.
And we are back. It is Wednesday night, WUWM at night. And that means it is time for some stories from Ex-Fabula. We do this on Wednesday night. Ex-Fabula co-founder Leah Delaney is nice enough and generous with her time to come in and do this with us. Good to see you again. We got some cool stories tonight.
Yeah, we really do. I'm excited about this show because, you know, normally with our story slams, we get nine people on stage. They tell their stories. Somebody gets chosen, becomes an audience favorite, and then the audience favorite, all of them from the season, get to get up on stage at Turner Hall Ballroom for the All-Stars event. And then there's a Grand Slam, like, finalist who, you know, wins the story, you know, the story glory, basically, at the end. And tonight, we are going to broadcast the original story from the Story Slam, and then we're going to broadcast his winning story at this year's All-Stars event.
So this storyteller was at one of the smaller monthly Story Slams and was the audience favorite for that evening.
Yes, back in January.
Okay. And then we're going to hear that person again with a separate story with it's his winning story or?
Yes, his All-Stars winning story.
I think I got it.
And just a little note about the All-Stars is that we usually have 5-minute stories at our normal Story Slams. Let's see how many times I can say the word story in 1 minute. Ready?
Go.
But at the All-Stars, we actually challenge these tellers, and we give them 10 minutes to tell a longer form. Mm. So for the first story tonight, like I said, it was back in January at the Hot Water Warehouse down the south side. The theme was Close Encounters, and Ames McGinnis told a story that won that night. And here we go.
I was a senior in high school in Colorado, where I grew up. And I was on a date, or kind of a date, with a girl from a different high school. I didn't know her very well. I remember she had beautiful black curly hair that rose straight up above her forehead and then cascaded down her shoulders, kind of like a mullet, but like an 18th century mullet. And it was the mid-1980s, and so I found her very, very beautiful. And I was trying to impress her. I was telling her about how the previous summer I had traveled to a foreign country, the country of Austria, which was true. I had visited a friend of mine who had been an exchange student at our high school. Well, as soon as I said Austria, this strange gleam came into her eyes, and she said, Austria. Tell me, when you were in Austria, did you visit a small city called Salzburg? Yeah, and actually, I had. So, yeah, I had. And she said, and when you were in the city of Salzburg, did you visit the house of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart? And actually, I had. Tell me, she said, what was the appearance of this house? So I described it as best as I could remember. It was tall, like 4 or 5 stories tall. Mozart actually only lived on one floor of the building. I had these thin rectangular windows and a steep pitched roof. Yes, she said. Yes, that's more or less how I remember it. And I said, oh, so you've been to Salzburg too? And she said, well, not exactly. And then it seemed as if she was holding something back for a second. And then she said, well, you see, Ames, in a previous life, I was married to Mozart. I was Mozart's wife. And then she stood up on her tiptoes and she kissed me right on the lips. I had been trying to figure out how I might kiss her, but she solved the problem. Right then and there, and then she kissed me again, and it was wonderful. But this kind of uneasiness was kind of seeping into me. And finally, we paused for a moment to catch our breaths, and I had to ask her, you know, I had kind of a hopeful voice. I said, so is it possible? Is it, like, possible that, like, maybe I was Mozart? No, she said. And then she kind of chuckled, and she said, no, you were not Mozart. I didn't know whether I was supposed to be disappointed or relieved. And actually, Mozart never came up again in our conversations. And we actually went to the prom, my senior prom together, and we had a good time, but we broke up pretty soon afterward, and really, I blame myself. You know, it's we would be out at the mall together or watching television or holding hands, or I would say something and it would make her laugh, and she had this beautiful laugh, kind of like the tinkling of a bell. But then I would think, is she thinking about me? Or is she thinking about Mozart? And it didn't really matter whether she had been married to Mozart or whether she or any of us has had a previous life. That, you know, the point was that she believed it. And, you know, I was 17 years old. How was I going to go head to head with frickin' Mozart? Anyway, I still think about her sometimes. I wonder if she's out there searching still. If she is, I know who she's searching for. And I know it's not me.
And that was Ames McGinnis with Audience Favorite back in January.
And now we're going to zip ahead to the All-Star Show, which was at Turner Hall in May, which I was there and had one heck of a good time because it was a quality start to finish. But this was and not only did Ames win the monthly Story Slam and was the audience favorite, but same thing with the All-Stars, right?
Yeah. He really blew everybody away. This is the first event that I've been at where people actually stood up. That we had a little bit of an encore, what is it, standing ovation?
Yeah.
I'm in theater, I should know that.
I was there. It was awesome.
Yeah,
and
so you
start thinking, you know, maybe, sir, you should think about, no.
Yeah. Staying with Expabula forever. That's what you're about to say, right, Bruce?
No. Right. No, I was going to say, you know, maybe you should quit your day job. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, lots of money in this.
Well, let's check out. Now, this is you said they get longer, more time to tell a longer story at the All-Star event. So this one's going to be a little bit longer, but well worth the listen, huh?
Oh, definitely. The theme of the night was Motherlode. So let's listen to Ames McGinnis.
When I was in my early 20s and still a student, I spent a year living in Panama City, Panama. I really wanted to live with a Panamanian family. The problem was that I didn't know anybody in Panama City. Well, with the exception of one family, I had their phone number. But my connection to this family was really tenuous. There was a daughter in the family who was the godmother of a child who was the son of the sister of a friend of mine. In the United States, that wouldn't even be a connection. But in Panama, that's all I had. And so I called the number, and the person who answered the phone was the mother in the family, Doña Carmen. And she said, we've been waiting for your phone call. Come on over. So I went to the house, and when I got to the house, the whole family was seated around the table in the house. There was Doña Carmen, the mother, her husband, Don Alonso, and her three grown children, all of whom were a little bit older than I was. Well, we were speaking in Spanish about my plans, and I don't know if I struck Doña Carmen as being a little pathetic or nerdy, but for whatever reason, she looked at me, and in Spanish, she said, Ames, Panama City is a big city. I think that maybe you should live with us while you're here. And then she clarified. She said, we're not interested in having a tenant in the house, but if you'd like, you'd be very welcome to join us como miembro de la familia, or as a member of the family. So I immediately said yes. I moved in the next day with my backpack and my books. And things were going well, you know, really well from my perspective. There was just one problem. You see, I had received a scholarship that was supposed to pay for my room and board. So I thought I should share this money with the family. But when I spoke with Doña Carmen about this, she shook her head and she said, "No, Ames, remember our arrangement. When we invited you into our home, we invited you as a miembro de la familia, as a member of the family. And in Panama, at least, members of families don't charge one another rent." So I understood, and I began to think of other ways to repay their kindness. And it happens I'm a pretty good baker, so I thought, you know, this is symbolic, but I'll bake one of my specialties, bran muffins. So I went to the supermarket, and I found some bran cereal, you know, the high-fiber kind, and I got the other ingredients, and I brought them home, and I baked a dozen muffins, and I served them at breakfast the next morning. Well, Doña Carmen, she was a big, really powerful woman in her late 50s. But when she looked at the muffins on the plate, she seemed a little hesitant. See, what I hadn't realized was that in Panama, at least in Panama back then, there really was no concept of a muffin. I mean, there were little cakes that had a muffin shape, but they were filled with sugar, and no one would ever think of, like, starting off their day with one of them. But Doña Carmen, to be nice, she took a muffin off the plate, and she ate it, and she went off to work. Well, it was the next day, breakfast the next day, and we were at the table, and Doña Carmen looked at me, and she said, "Ames, are there any of those muffins left?" You know, and I had 10 of them in the kitchen. So I brought them out to the table, and Doña Carmen took a muffin off the plate, and then she looked at me, and she said, "Acabo de hacer el depósito más grande." And that was not an idiom that I was familiar with. It's like, I just made the biggest deposit. But then I get it. I wasn't sure how to respond, so I said, "Me alegro." You know, I'm very pleased to hear that. And then she got this kind of conspiratorial look on her face, and she said, "I'm going to spread the word about these. I'm going to spread the word about these muffin." Well, the word did spread. And I think, you know, within 3 weeks, I think I must have been supplying nearly every older woman in the neighborhood and in the parish church with these bran muffins. I was baking 2 or 3 dozen a night. And, you know, when I arrived in Panama, it wasn't the connection that I had imagined making with the Panamanian people. But, you know, it was a connection, and it felt good. Anyway, it was a time for me to make a side trip to the neighboring country of Colombia. And my Panamanian family and friends were concerned about my safety. The night before my departure from Panama City, there was a knock on the door. And it was Doña Pilar. Doña Pilar was a neighbor of ours who lived down the block. And she was kind of a mysterious woman. Her husband had disappeared long ago, and I guess she had had a son, but he had died in some unspeakable way. I think he had gotten on the wrong side of the law in some way. At any rate, she came to the door asking to speak with El Hombre de los Muffin. You know, the Muffin Man. And it was very sweet. She had baked a carrot cake for me and wrapped it in tinfoil for me to take with me on the airplane. And she was wearing a cross around her neck, and she took the cross off her neck and she put it into my hands, and she said to me, "This cross is very special. It's from Portobello, which is a city on the Caribbean coast of Panama." And she said, it belonged to my son, and I want you to wear it every day that you're in Colombia. And if you wear that cross every day that you're in Colombia, you will be taken care of." So I said, "Thank you." I put the cross in my backpack. I took it with me to Colombia. And you know, I'm not a big person for jewelry, especially religious jewelry. But I did what Doña Pilar told me to do. Every day I put the cross on and I tucked it under my shirt. And I was there for 3 months and nothing bad happened to me. On the contrary, I led what I think could only be described as a charmed life. You know, I don't know if I've ever felt safer or freer of concern. Anyway, after the 3 months, I returned to Panama City, and it was Doña Carmen who gave me the news. It turned out that Doña Pilar had died just a few days after I had left Panama City. And when I heard this news, you know, it made me sad. And I said to Doña Carmen, I said, "I wish I could have repaid Doña Pilar for her kindness, you know, like brought her some muffins or something." And then Doña Carmen gave me this stern but loving look. It was a look that she gave me a lot. And she said, "So you really think that all this was about the muffins?" And then she said, "Poor Ames, always calculating what you owe to other people and what other people owe to you. Well, let me tell you, Doña Pilar was a mother, and I'm a mother too. And we also have our own reasons for doing things, for the sacrifices we make and the burdens we take on." And then she said something that I thought about a lot, especially around this time of year. She said to me, "El amor de la madre, or the love of a mother, is not something that you earn. It's not a loan that you pay back with interest. It is," and here she used a word in Spanish that I think is very beautiful. She said, "El amor de la madre es una bendición. The love of a mother is a blessing." Thank you.
And that was the winner of the All-Stars this year at Turner Hall Ballroom, Ames McGinnis.
I guess we'd call him your 2013-2014 All-Star.
Indeed. Yes. Yes.
Good stories. And another season in the planning stages right now to fire up again when? September, October? Something.
Yeah, like we're actually going to have a kickoff in September. Okay. And then October, we'll start with our normal Story Slam season. And that's like on a Tuesday or Wednesday night during the month, once a month.
So right now you guys are like brainstorming themes and venues and for the shows, but that's not all that X-Fabula does. You got extra stuff going on too, right?
We do. We just started out holding workshops, storytelling workshops this year, and they were really successful. We also have a lot of great like things going on. We have a membership program we're going to roll out. We have so much to do, so little time. And I also want to invite the audience to actually give us ideas and themes, too. I mean, you're always welcome. We always want to hear your voice, whether you're up on stage or you're yanking in our shirt tails at an event. We always want to hear what you have to say.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
All right. We'll have more details as the season approaches, I'm sure.
Yes.
Every Wednesday night, there are X-Fabula stories on the radio here on WUWM at night. And as we said, Leah Delaney, co-founder of X-Fabula, generous with her time to come in and do this with us every week.
Thank you so much, Bruce.